So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
We have the highest stock market in the history of our country by far, every single month. That's another thing you should camp. You know, they like to demean that. You know what the Democrats, well, that doesn't mean anything. That's just, no. That means jobs and it means 401ks because a lot of people have 401ks.
I was looking at my 401k yesterday. I can't remember which guest it was that we had on yesterday, but they were saying something like, look at the stock market. And I'm like, I think I will look at my little stock market here. It's been going much better than those Biden years, hasn't it? Well, let's talk to the man who knows all the details, Steve Moore, co-founder of the Committee for Prosperity, host of More Money. Steve, welcome back. Happy New Year to you. Thanks for being with us today.
Happy New Year. I missed you, Annie. by the way, I missed the first part of that. Was that Trump?
Yes. That was from...
What did he say?
He's talking about how good the stock market is going and how we're hitting records. He gave a number of how many times in 2025.
And then did he mention the 401ks? Or?
Yeah, he was just talking about how people need to be looking at their 401ks right now and seeing how good
things are going. Oh, yeah, okay, because the reason I ask about that is, you know, at Unleash Prosperity, we released this big study about 2 weeks ago about, you know, the fact that the average 401k plan has seen about a $22,000 increase in its valuation after inflation, above inflation. So, you know, that's I think maybe Trump saw our study, and that's why he's saying, look at the 401ks. And by the way, that under Biden, you know what happened to 401ks under Biden?
What? What was the number?
After inflation, they went down by about $20,000.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean,
because inflation was so high that the returns didn't keep up. You know, that's what happens when you have 21% inflation over 4 years.
I really think about President Trump. Like, he didn't even spend the entirety of 2025 in office, just a little bit short of that, a little over 11 months. But he had done an enormous amount of good to getting everything back on track. But he had to dig himself out of a pretty deep hole. What's 2026 going to look like?
Good. It's going to be a blockbuster year. And I get frustrated with friends and colleagues and, you know, people I meet on the street affordability crisis. I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah, there is affordability crisis. Its name is Joe Biden. I mean, he created the affordability crisis. Trump inherited the affordability crisis from Biden when, remember, in the first year in office, Biden had 9% inflation, the highest rate since Jimmy Carter. And so it takes a long time, Annie, to get prices back to stabilization levels, and we're getting close to that. The last report on inflation was very good, and now we move into 2026, and it's going to be a blockbuster year. People are going to get refunds on some of the tariffs are going to come down. People are going to get more money in their paycheck because less money is going to be withheld thanks to the big, beautiful tax bill. We're going to see gas prices continue to fall, in my opinion, so we might be down to less than $2.50 a gallon nationally. Right now, I think we're at $2.79. So, it's a good picture. It really is. And, you know, I have to say, and I'm just saluting our troops and our servicemen and women for one of the most amazing military operations in 50 years. I mean, it's just incredible what they were able to accomplish. And what is going on with our friends on the left who are, like, defending Maduro?
Well, you know the answer to that. Donald Trump did it. Which means they're against it. It's really that simple, isn't it?
It's pretty amazing, though, isn't it, that the left hates Trump more than Maduro? Maduro was starved to death. Is starving to death his citizens.
An actual
his own
dictator.
People.
Yeah.
Yes. And I mean, in a brutal dictator at that. And so I just find it, that we had a little hotline cartoon. I hope your listeners get our hotline. It's just go to unleashprosperity.com and you get it for free. But, you know, it showed Trump with like a magician on a hat on his head and said, my next trick, I'm going to make liberals defend a narco-terrorist fascist dictator.
And it's an easy way to do it. Donald Trump supports it. We're speaking with Steve Moore. Sign up for that Unleash Prosperity hotline. I get it. And it's a great source of information-based based in facts, which I always appreciate. You mentioned tariffs. That was kind of one of the main stories of 2025. Here's a question. I know you're not a tariff guy, Steve Moore, but was for Donald Trump, are tariffs the goal or is tariff a strategy?
Good question. I think maybe a little bit of both. You know, Trump, you know, when I've been in meetings with him, he always, I love tariffs. It's my favorite word.
Most beautiful and, word.
but he also is a very strategic guy. I mean, I have to say the more time that I, you know, around him, and that's, you know, every now and then, the more convinced I am. He's like two moves on the chessboard ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, he really is. So he was saying one time, you know, gosh, I went over there and I saw the Japanese and, you know, the first thing I said to them was, we're going to have to put 100% tariff on you guys. Ah!
You know, they were,
no, no, please, well, don't do that to us. Okay, well, then give us A, B, C, D, E, and they just sign on a dotted line. And so he's a very shrewd negotiator and he always puts America first. And that is a great quality of Trump. As you said, I don't always agree with Trump's moves, and I'm glad that he took out Maduro. Now I want to get out. I want to get out of Venezuela. I'm not a nation builder. I don't know about you, but I think that's a bad idea.
Yes.
But, you know, so, but in terms of his stewardship of the economy, I think we could see as much as 4% growth in the economy over after inflation, which would be gigantic. And when you get growth like that, because I know I hear from your listeners a lot and they say, well, what about the debt? And I say, yeah, I'm concerned about the debt. I know you're concerned about the debt and the deficit. But if you keep growing the economy, guess what happens to tax revenues? They go up. Right. And more people working, businesses making more money, the government collects more. And so my point is, if you get 4% growth and you stay on that path, you start to really reduce the burden of the debt. And that's what Trump is trying to do.
Yeah. I think about, you know, the part of the tariff strategy, if it is a strategy and not the goal, has been to onshore business and production and jobs.
Yes.
And if you grow, you know, I look back on really what I've seen in TV. I was born in the mid 80s, but looking at the Industrial Revolution and the pride that people took in work, in their job and what they did, a lot of the, you know, labor unions, the way that they would really champion skills and work. We have so incredibly lost that now we celebrate victimhood and handouts. That if he's successful,
welfare,
successful getting those jobs and production back, that would be economically incredibly beneficial for the country.
Yeah, and that's what Trump wants to do. And incidentally, I have to tell you, you know, I'm sure you and your listeners have been following this story about what's happened with Tim Walz in Minnesota. And by the way, I mean, it kind of makes my heart skip a beat when I think about, can you imagine if Tim Walz had been the vice president of the United States?
No, I don't even want to.
Who let fraud, I mean, the fraud is rampant in Minnesota. And he should not just resign, he should go to jail. I mean, billions and billions of dollars, Annie, were stolen from taxpayers.
Anyway, he didn't know about it?
Do you think he didn't know about it?
He's a bad governor if he knew about it and if he didn't know about it. I don't think he can escape that one.
Good point. But I guarantee you, I mean, you know, he had, what was that expression in the 80s? Plausible deniability. He didn't want to know.
Yeah.
He didn't want to know what was going on in these daycare centers and with the food stamps and with the, you know, the healthcare clinics that were just ripping off the federal taxpayers. Billions of dollars, folks. Billions.
Yeah.
That's one with like nine zeros. And, you know, he finally had to resign in disgrace. But I think we should really look at criminal penalties against politicians who allow these. They're stealing. It would be like if I walk up to you on the street and had a gun in my hand and said, empty your purse. I want all your money. How's that different than when these fraudsters steal money through our tax code?
It's just government. It's government organized, it seems. Last question before we let
you go. It's organized crime, right?
Yes, exactly. Steve Moore speaking with us. You know, I like to ask you about Illinois. The president said, in light of what was going on in Minnesota, he listed several states that he said the fraud is worse in those states. One of them was Illinois. You have hope for some of these other states where it might be worse than Minnesota?
Well, I don't know. I'm not surprised that Illinois is on that list. And I would imagine, you know, New Jersey and some of those blue states where, you know, the Democratic governors are very clear about this. They want to see here. I want to make sure your listeners understand this. they want as many people as possible to sign up for these programs because it brings federal money into their state. They regard the fraud as a way to stimulate the local economy.
Yeah. And we've seen the amount of money in the state of Illinois going to subsidize illegal immigrants with an invitation attached to it for them to come and use those services in the state of Illinois. It definitely does not serve the taxpayer at all.
Yeah.
Steve Moore, thank you for being with us today. We don't want to take up too much of your time.
It's a it's going to be a great year. You can hold me to that. That's my prediction for 2026.
That's a great
year for the economy.
Thank you so much. Take care. Happy New Year.
Bye-bye.
Co-founder of the Committee for Prosperity, that is Steve Moore, author of The Trump Economic Miracle. And I really am looking forward to what 2026 bears out, economically speaking. And also, I really feel like it's the scoreboard moment for the Trump administration when the buzzer's going to run out in November at the midterm election. If the president is going to be successful in the way that he says he's going to be successful with the economy, it's going to set in 2026, and Americans are going to recognize it because you recognize what's going on with your pocketbook. You can love a politician who's telling you that affordability is there and everything's great, and if you don't feel it in your pocketbook, you're not going to believe the politician. And what we've seen from this administration is essentially the idea of help is on the way, and not in the form of more government, not in the form of expanded programs for you to borrow from, in eliminating fraud, in lowering your tax burden, and instigating prosperity within the free market. That's what we've seen from this administration. And if the president is right, and this is what he's been saying, 2026 is the year we're going to boom. And I'm looking forward to it. It's always great to have Steve Moore on the show with us. All right, quick break. Dustin Grage is going to be with us at 1:30, so 15 minutes from right now. He's a Minnesota-based columnist for Town Hall. He's going to give us the report exactly on that Minnesota fraud we were just talking with Steve Moore about. So stick around for that at 1:30. The YouTube poll, should the Senate pass the SAVE Act, which would require proof of citizenship to vote in all federal elections? Yes or no? Go vote in the Annie Fry YouTube live chat poll. We'll be right back. There's this little rumor.
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try assemble and bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Floating around that Trey Gowdy is going to take over Pam Bondi at AG.
I've seen that rumor.
I never know if these things get legs of their own. Like, you just need one person associated with the rumor that gets it put out there that everyone's like, oh, I heard. Just like me doing this right now. I don't know if that's a possibility at all. I do know that Trey Gowdy and Marco Rubio were great friends.
Okay.
Probably still are. And I could see how that connection would be good for the administration. People are super frustrated that Trey Gowdy didn't do more when he was at Oversight that he was in charge of.
I don't remember.
Jason Chaffetz was part of that committee, and they were, you know, looking into a lot of the Russia collusion stuff, and they wanted to see more from him. Trey Gowdy ran away from Washington, D.C. like he was running from a fire. But I look at... I've seen him speak in person at a Vitae Foundation event, and he made it to a stand at the speech. Obviously, that's why he was hired to do it, whatever, for life. But I just really like Trey Gowdy. We have had Trey Gowdy on the show multiple times. When Trey Gowdy comes on the show, he acts like we're old friends.
That's cool.
I'm flattered.
Yeah, it's true.
Do you remember when he's like, Andy, the last time we talked, I'm like, it was 7 months. Did you Google it? That's so cool.
The last time he was here was not very long ago either. It was like within the last month.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I know that there are a lot of people in the audience. They're probably in the YouTube chat right now going, Trey Gowdy is a blah, blah, blah. Gloria says Trey is, all caps, not a good choice. I'm not convinced. Because I think it's possible that Trey Gowdy was not as tough as he needed to be as a congressman, but attorney general, the top prosecutor, this guy knows how to win cases. And I feel like if you were fluent in prosecution and then you went into politics, I feel like it would be maddening to have to play the political game ahead of the prosecutorial game. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I feel
different
like
worlds.
Yeah, completely different worlds. Like, you know, every time you hear somebody, you know, James Comer's like, "Oh, we're going to send Tim Walz a subpoena." I'm like, "Ooh." You know?
Yeah.
I want it to be a big deal, but it never turns into a big deal. That's what everybody's saying. Nobody is being prosecuted. Nobody is going to jail. Trey Gowdy, to me, and I am open to the idea that people have criticisms about him because he didn't do enough. I don't know that he could have if he wanted to. I actually would prefer Trey Gowdy over Pam Bondi just because I think he is the bulldog's bulldog.
Well, he's a much better media personality than Pam Bondi is, so he could carry the message better.
I'm not a Pam Bondi hater either.
No.
But Pam Bondi to me is, I'm like, if Trump says so, I'm putting my full trust. Marco Rubio, I don't need Donald Trump to be like, listen, guys, he's really actually great at what he does. I don't need to have that endorsement of Marco Rubio because I can see it with my own two eyes. Pam Bondi, I watch her and I don't feel it's her presentation, which might be completely unfair to Pam Bondi.
Well, that's part of that job, though.
That's fair.
And she's not good at it.
And listen, it's not a girl thing, because I think Carolyn Leavitt
and Harmy Dillon,
A plus. Gray streak.
Oh, Tulsi.
Tulsi Gabbard. Sorry. I don't know why I'm still like still fresh. I said we wouldn't be on our A game until Thursday and it would crash and burn on Friday. Choose accordingly to when you listen. But Tulsi Gabbard, no problem there. There are a lot of women. Susie Wiles, I think she's stone cold. I love it about her. Pam Bondi, just the one person. I would say the same thing about Matt Gaetz. Totally different opposite ends of the spectrum, but the presentation Matt Gaetz would have brought to the attorney general position, which to me is like the weirdest. To me, it was like Donald Trump had a list and it was like, you know, type A for Pam Bondi, type B for Ron DeSantis, type C for something else. And it was like D, other. And then someone was like, ooh, Matt Gaetz, that'd be fun. And he slipped his finger and hit D and then it got out of control and they couldn't be like, like an auto pen kind of a situation that somebody else made. How did Matt Gaetz get nominated for the attorney general position when it was obvious that he was going out in a blaze of glory in Congress?
I don't know. That Matt Gaetz did an interview recently and confirmed, no, that was not some sort of game or accident or media play, that it was real, at least according to him.
To me, it felt like a way for him out of Congress that didn't look like he was booted.
Yeah, and that may be. The interesting thing, the way you started the segment, was talking about Trey Gowdy. He, when I'll give you credit here. Whenever I listen to you interview him, he says things that are out of the box that surprise you.
It never sounds like he's even read the talking points.
Right. Which part of that surprises me and sort of inspires me a little bit, that if he were the attorney general, that maybe he would come at things very creatively. Because to me, that's what you need, is somebody who not only knows the law really well and can carry the message, but who can come at these things in a way that says, yeah, but have we thought about this? What about this law? We haven't really approached that yet. Have we done it this way? Doing things differently than it's always been done according to the law and within the bounds of law. Now, I think he's got that creativity. I don't know whether he has the boldness to understand the moment that we live in. That these things...
You don't think... You're unsure if he has the boldness?
I'm unsure. I'm not saying that he doesn't. I'm saying I don't know.
I think that that is what he has in spades. The boldness to do what needs to be done. I don't know that he is going to assess... Let me start over. I think he's such a realist Because you have to be in a courtroom. You have to know 100% where you're going to win a case. And you have to be sure of yourself. You've been listening to me say this as long as anybody sitting here, but there are going to be a lot of people who are never arrested because they are going to have distanced themselves. They're going to have too many layers between the crime and the high profile people that they're not going to be the ones who are arrested. The orange jumpsuit, the perp walk, the handcuffs that everybody wants to see so bad, in some cases are not going to happen. Because if you can't prove it in court, if there's a statute of limitations, if those obstacles that are part of our legal system are, you know, he's going to observe those, it's not going to be, is he guilty? It's going to be, can I prove it in court? Can I win? Because you can't do it if you can't win.
Yeah.
And there have been, like, how much corruption has existed at the Department of Justice? You know, everyone wants to come back, not everyone. There's a certain group of people who wants to keep coming back to the Epstein files. Shockingly, it was never a discussion point of the left until they thought that they could pin it on Trump. And almost amusingly, the only reason they continue to talk about it is because it seems like the only thing that they can pin on Trump. And it's the obscurity of it. There's no factual information that ties Donald Trump in a negative way to Jeffrey Epstein. It doesn't exist. But they want the illusion, the mystery around it. That's the talking point for them. Because, again, everything that has to do with going against Donald Trump, that's just what they're for. If Trey Gowdy were to become the prosecutor and to be presented with the opportunity to prosecute some of these people, I think he would go to town prosecuting people. But I bet you there would be a lot of people whose names, is it James Comey? Because Trey Gowdy and James Comey have gone rounds with each other. If it's not James Comey, there are going to be people associated with James Comey who aren't so fortunate as Comey is. And the thing about Trey Gowdy that I appreciate so much, which is also something that I think a lot of people dislike about him significantly, is I think he is so principled on the issues that the political party influence, he's so allergic to that he never wants to do anything because it's what a party wants him to do. It always, like, the root of the principle has to be the be-all end-all for him to pursue something. And I think that outside of being a prosecutor in a courtroom, that the politics obviously has to influence those positions, but he's not the politician. He's the prosecutor. So he just thinks differently than we do. The emotions and the, you know, kind of red shirt, blue shirt that all of us are fully engrossed in, he hates it. He despises it because he thinks that the truth should win the day. And that's not somebody who's cheering for an outcome. He's cheering for the truth to win the outcome. And that, in a political realm, that's easy to poo-poo. Which is why I kind of think that's like a cred to him.
Why, the way you're describing it is a credit to him. And if that is 100% who he is, then that is a good thing.
And if Trey Gowdy comes out and says, this is what's going on, I believe him.
I do too. And I give him that 100%
because
of the
that.
Time.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know. Trey Gowdy for AG, maybe that'll be a poll this week.
Yeah.
Maybe. I know how it's going to go with our audience.
No, I would like to see that. Yeah. That's an interesting poll.
I think I'm in the minority there. But I'll stand by it because I, too, try to be principled when it's not terribly scary. When we come back, Dustin Grage is going to join us. I'm excited to talk to him. He's a Minnesota-based columnist. He writes for Town Hall, and he is at the forefront of being able to talk to us about all of this Minnesota fraud. I've got a ton of questions for him. Ryan, you're going to help me out with as well. So let's talk to Dustin here on the Annie Fry Show. He's going to zoom in with us. You can watch it on the Annie Fry YouTube channel when you come to vote. Should the Senate pass the SAVE Act requiring proof of citizenship to vote in federal elections? Yes or no? Come hit us up with a vote. Say hi to Dustin. We'll be right back. Unless you
offend it. Improving the state is being a parrot for Donald Trump, agreeing to everything that he agreed with. Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. It ain't happening. I'm not going anywhere. And you can make all your requests for me to resign over my dead body. Will that happen? I will fight this thing till the very end to make this state better. And the question that I think they need to decide is when did the guy in the White House resign? When does he take accountability for what he did? Because it isn't going to happen here in terms of us shying away from making this.
What is Governor Tim, what is he talking about? Over my dead body, he says that he will resign. He's not going to do it. And so let's go to Minnesota. Dustin Grage joins us now, Minnesota-based columnist for Town Hall, a writer for Town Hall, and he gives political analysis and research, and he's here with us live today. Dustin, thank you for coming on the show with us. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. So let me talk to you a little bit about what's leading into Tim Walz pulling himself out of the election to become governor once again. He hasn't resigned yet, so he's going to finish his term. Is this a direct result of the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, where the Minnesota fraud in the system, in the Learing Center, the Quality Learing Center, the daycares across the state, among other things, do you think that his resignation from running for re-election is a direct result of this fraud report?
I would say it's a direct result.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
The last year and a half, actually. So go back to the moment he became the vice presidential nominee with Kamala Harris. Because if you go back to that time, Tim Walz's approval rating was at 53% in the state of Minnesota. Today, before the Nick Shirley report hit, by the way, 48% and 48% disapproval. So he is locked in the middle right now before everything really takes over with the Shirley stuff. Then from there, everyone's kind of familiar with the Learing Center and what has come of that, and knowing what was going to come even after that. Because even after Shirley kind of just broke open the water gates after the Rufo report, people are familiar with that, led to Shirley. Now we're seeing 2,000 agents come to Minnesota this week to start enforcing not just immigration law, but going about and figuring out which of these businesses are fraudulent. And then Tim Walz, who has known about this fraud that's been occurring for the last 7 years, knows that there's going to be even more and more and more. And it's going to drag along because we're also going to have congressional hearings. State representatives are actually going to be there at the Capitol tomorrow to talk about this, and the whistleblowers that have seen blowback from Tim Walz for trying to actually address this fraud. But he knows he's on the wrong side of history. And when he's at that 48% right now, and all of this is still to come, he knew he was done at this point. So rather than take accountability and actually go through and try to find the voters on this, he decides to step back. But get this, he is now trying to get Amy Klobuchar to run. And why is that, you ask? It's because Amy Klobuchar is the current U.S. senator. So if she were to win the governorship, vacate that seat, guess who she gets to appoint to the U.S. Senate without casting a single vote? Ugh. Governor Tim Walz.
Gosh. I was going to say, he seems like he has nude pictures of somebody. Like, how did he get this far? It doesn't really make sense to me. We're speaking with Dustin.
Fake it till you make it. that is the definition of Tim Walz,
yes.
For sure.
Dustin Grage speaking with us right now. He's a Town Hall columnist. He is in Minnesota. I live in Illinois, Dustin. So working here in St. Louis in a free state and go home to the People's Republic. But we were talking a little bit earlier in the state of Illinois. We're so frustrated. There are so many people who are frustrated with the state government. You know about the fraud, the corruption, and all of this. You've been screaming it and nobody's been listening for so long. And I'm wondering if there's a kinship to Minnesotans who have known about this for so much longer, and then Nick Shirley releases this report, it catches fire and everybody knows about it now. Is this vindicating for folks like you, Dustin, who have probably been keenly aware of what's going on and how the state has been run?
Oh, absolutely. And this is why I said it goes back a year and a half at this point, because I had worked in by trade, I have been an operative. I'm recently more into the more reporting analysis area writing. But before that, I actually worked for all these statewide campaigns. I wrote the Oppo book on a lot of these candidates for Tim Walz, for Keith Ellison, so on and so forth. So I just simply had this information out there. And once Tim Walz, which I was 2 weeks ahead of the game, people thought I was crazy when I said Tim Walz is going to be the nominee. I have a source who says he's going to be the nominee. People thought I was crazy. 2 weeks later, I wasn't so crazy. Mm. And then so I just dumped the Oppo book. And then this is kind of where it's come since, because these were reports that were just ignored by local Minnesota media. Vice versa. And I have a lot of friends, state representatives out there in Illinois as well. And they say the same thing, or in Maryland or any of these blue states, they will bring up all of this Oppo on these candidates. But until they actually get outside of their insulated bubble, many people will never find out about this stuff. So that has been the gift. The moment he went national is when everything started to fall in his glass house. But yeah, that's been the story.
Mm. We're talking with Dustin Grace, Minnesota-based columnist for Town Hall, providing political analysis and research. Dustin, this is Ryan. I have a good friend who lives in Minneapolis. And when this story started to break, I just texted him. I said, hey, is this big local news? Are you guys really paying attention? Or are we just kind of, you know, hearing it from outside and everybody's focusing on you guys, but you're not, you know, that plugged into it? He said, well, I don't know. I pay attention mostly national news too. So he knew all about it. But I'm asking you, being in Minnesota, is this like water cooler discussion type stuff right now?
I would say so. Granted, I come from a little bit of a different background. My family's pretty well attuned to politics, but this was, you know, kind of more of a surface level, knowing like, oh yeah, we know this fraud's happening. We've seen it reported on. And, you know, the cycle might last a couple days if it goes on a local newscast. But if you read the paper, you'll never hear about it, because the largest distributed paper here in the state of Minnesota is actually run and operated by a former Tim Walz commissioner. So like the amount of bureaucracy, not just in our government and the institutional disadvantages Republicans have had there, but as well in media, because a lot of their operatives end up working the media in these local markets and they completely take it over. So that's kind of been the story there. So like, did we know about it? Like, yes, but it's been more surface level stuff. It's never really been in depth. But now when I go to the grocery store, it is rare where I don't hear the word fraud whispered among people 2 to 3 times by the time I'm done grocery shopping. People are talking about it everywhere. That's been the anecdotal evidence. And while we haven't had a new poll since that 48-48 with Walz, I predict Tim probably did some internal polling since all this broke and it did not look good. And quite frankly, if any of his friends were at the grocery store, they were letting him know that this is what people were talking about.
Yeah.
Dustin, you know, right before we started talking to you, we were talking about, would there be arrests? Will, you know, who's going to go down for this? Who's going to take the fall? And I saw, you know, just this morning that there's resurfaced audio from the attorney general there, Keith Ellison, that says that he's on record pledging to help move this stuff past. You know, I'm just asking you, do you think we're actually going to see arrests of known names here?
There is a very real possibility of that. Now, I can't confirm those quite yet, but I have heard very reliable sources say out of the DC belt that there is substantial evidence on some individuals, of which the individuals, I don't know who they are, but I've heard that's a very real possibility. But at a minimum, they are currently going door to door right now, DHS and everyone in Minnesota, and they are going after the smaller fish right now in mass. So that is happening right now. Now, these bigger fish, I will just tell you that Minnesotans all around, and I'm hearing this from senators and reps in their constituency emails, they're like, oh, I'm going to ask for him to resign. They're like, no, we don't want resignations anymore. We want arrests. We want people in handcuffs. This is what people are asking for at this point.
Yeah.
They believe it. And to be just completely honest, I would be shocked if not a single Democrat representative didn't know about this fraud, or at least wasn't involved at some point.
Yeah.
Because how can it stay hidden this long? And quite frankly, there have been, at least at the city council level in Minneapolis, Jamal Osman, who's the highest ranking Somali member on that council, he has actually been involved with this fraud directly. He hasn't been convicted or prosecuted yet on any of it, but his wife had a fraudulent shell nonprofit. Him and his wife ran a nonprofit, handed off to two other individuals, which went on to go commit millions of dollars in feeding our future fraud. So we have direct connections here.
Yeah.
Now, will they reach that point yet? That's still to be determined. But there are individuals caught up in this. The fraudsters are donating directly to their campaigns, so on and so forth. And you have to believe somebody knew something at some point. Now we just have to, like you said earlier in the last segment, we have to prove it and actually get handcuffs out.
Yeah. Dustin Grage speaking with us right now, writing for Town Hall, as he indicated there, a former op. I would love to do opposition research. That was that super fun? Did you enjoy
it? It is fun.
Yeah.
I have found that it's not that different from reporting or anything. Like, it's, you know, hey, let's go back in the Wayfinder. Let's go find these old articles on these people. If it's just that you put it out there rather than you put out a press release or a memo or whatever to reporters. But a lot of the time, you know, it's kind of frustrating. They don't actually use it or pick it up. So when you actually get to put it out there and people listen, it's a very different ball game. And, it, you know, it's a lot more fun this way.
Yeah,
you can create, you can actually do it yourself.
That does sound compelling. I think I would enjoy that greatly. I want to ask you to, before we let you go, and we really hope you'll come back because we know the story is growing.
Oh, yeah.
It's growing. It's not going away. And we love having you here. I want to ask you to impart on us what you would like to see other states do, because maybe Minnesota is going to be really the biggest crack in the ice where the ripple effects other states, especially these states that are blue states. And we were talking about this a little bit earlier. Like, I don't think the people of the state of Illinois specifically are represented in their government, in their state government. And I'm wondering if you feel the same way, like in Minnesota, the government is not a reflection of the people of Minnesota. Those Democrat parties are corrupt and they've got such a strong stranglehold that they're able to replicate a system that works for them, not for the people. How can other states look at what is being uncovered in Minnesota and has been for years, but now is a national story? How can other states replicate the research, the effort to try to expose that on their own state fronts?
No, I mean, that's a good question. And quite frankly, like, I'll throw a little hat tip here at Elon. I mean, quite frankly, even if Tim Walz goes national, a lot of this stuff still really doesn't come out unless Elon Musk buys Twitter.
Oh,
that is a lot of the reason. I mean, this is just simply me making an account, making some network connections, and dumping out the information I found. That's simply all that ended up happening. Then Fox would pick it up, radio stations like yours would pick it up, and then it became a whole thing. Independent media is so important, and then actually utilizing those resources at our disposal and get just the information out. I recently just did a short documentary on a autism center here in Minnesota, one of the larger ones. They're going to go bankrupt this upcoming week because Tim Walz put 90-day pause payments on all programs, whether they're fraudulent or not. So a business of 20 plus years is now going to go bankrupt and has been a staple for the autism community here. Nobody knew that was happening. I just put out a video. I produced a video, put it out there. Now it's going to be mass produced on Fox News here. I was just given permission that, you know, now that autism center provider is going to go on Will Cain later today.
Ugh.
This is how it happens. Local, you're the guys who all know what's happening and how it's happening. Get that information, package it, and get it to the right people. And put, even just put it out there and post it on X and find someone that you can DM to share it. Information is as accessible as it has ever been. Just package it and get it out there, and it will pick up if it's good information.
Yeah, amen to that. And Dustin, that's why we want to have you back specifically on this Minnesota story, because I think getting the report from someone like you after being so grassroots and on the ground there compared to the filter by the time it gets to the national media, it's a 2-minute, you know, little package that gets put together. We want the real story, and we want it from folks like you. Dustin, thank you for the time today. We hope you'll come back soon.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Dustin Grage is a Minnesota-based columnist for Town Hall. He has spent many of his years working in opposition research, in reporting, in exposing truth to the American people. And to his point, I know we say it, but it can't ever be said enough. What Elon Musk, I was just thinking about this. He is, I think, the patriot of our time.
Certainly unexpectedly.
Imagine if Elon Musk was for the other side. I guess he'd be George Soros.
Yeah.
But isn't it weird how, like, the George Soros of the world operates behind the scenes? Could Elon Musk be any more in front? I mean, he's tweeting at night with average Joes.
and he's the spokesperson for his companies. I mean, he's the face of Tesla and SpaceX and everything.
Yeah, every time it comes up, it is well worth the acknowledgement. Thank you, Elon Musk. You've really given the country a chance for hope. Dustin Grage, go follow him on X at Grage Dustin. And you can go to DustinGrage.com to learn more about what he's doing. Great to have him here. Thank you to Brad for setting that up with us. All right, let's take a quick break. A little more Annie Fry Show around the corner here, of course. Should the Senate pass the SAVE Act, go let us know what you think on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. We'll be right back.
Wounded discover, there's always something more you wish he'd say.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. I really like talking. We need to talk to more people like that in 2026. One of the really great things about 97.1, what are we, 25? We're 25 years in. That's a really long time for a conservative talk station to be on the air.
Yeah.
Especially on FM. When this station was put on FM as a conservative talk station, the people behind that, wonderful people who took an opportunity at first, and it kind of like grew into itself. But Jeff and Jim and the whole team that put this together 20 years ago, I started working at 97.1 in 2009. It's wild to know that I came in February of 2009, which means that Barack Obama had been inaugurated like a minute ago. So 8 years, it's so weird for me to think of this because that seems like an enormous amount of time, but I don't feel like I've been. It seems like a ton of time and no time at the same time. But 8 years of Barack Obama and watching the station exist through those 8 years, Donald Trump comes in. I will never forget. Like, I can smell the night. Like, it is tangible to me when Donald Trump won in 2016. Because we realized as it was happening, wait a second. None of us really considered the fact that he could win this thing.
Oh, nobody did. Nobody did.
It was almost like you were going to a funeral in a sense, or you knew that it was imminent. You had this idea, you know, it was, you were about to resign yourself to the fact, okay, yes, obviously Hillary Clinton is going to be president, but you didn't want to say that. And you wanted a hope for the, you wanted a slice of hope. And we had it. And it helped that Donald Trump was wildly entertaining in his pursuit of the presidency. So, like, if you have a stiff up there, I don't know, like a Joe Biden, whose entire campaign in 2020 was be seen as little as possible, go to as few places as possible, because I'm not going to beat Donald Trump. I'm going to let Donald Trump beat himself in 2020. And maybe, you know, I get by with a little help from my friends, but we don't know that for sure yet. that was the 2020 MO. And I, you know, obviously now Joe Biden became the president. But in the course of all of this, 97.1 has been the Fox News radio affiliate here in St. Louis. Very proud to be in connection here with Fox News. It opens the door for us to get great guests to bring to you, people who are, you know, prolific. You watch them on TV, of course. They're the ones who get to talk to the top guests. You know, having Brian Kilmeade on this station, I remember when Glenn Beck was replaced with Brian Kilmeade and people were really mad about it. And now people love Brian Kilmeade. It's a very different show than Glenn Beck, of course. But thinking about the peak people who we've been able to talk to over the course of this, Elon Musk buying Twitter makes people like Dustin Grage the new big guest to get. And, you know, maybe not everybody in the country knows his name, but he's really the impetus for the stories that end up driving the national news. Because local grassroots reporters now have a place that they can create a telling of a story that never would have been heard otherwise.
Oh, yeah. Suppressed fully. It, you know, it really took the impetus off of celebrities, too. Do you notice that? Celebrities just aren't the influencers on Twitter.
Yeah. Like, why do you care what any of them think? You really don't. And now you don't even have to fake that you do. X's and Y's in the next hour. Don't go away.